It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret. Apollo 13 astronaut and Milwaukee's own James Lovell died earlier this month at age 97. Born in Cleveland, Lovell and his mother moved to Milwaukee at an early age. That's where he attended high school and then enrolled in UW-Madison before entering the U.S. Naval Academy. Lovell ultimately became the first astronaut to go to space four times. He may be best known for his role in commanding Apollo 13 in 1970. The mission would have marked America's third moon landing. But an explosion resulting from a damaged oxygen tank left the crew stranded hundreds of thousands of miles from Earth. Lovell piloted the craft back from the brink of disaster where it landed in the South Pacific Ocean. Here he is reflecting on the view circling the moon and looking back at Earth during a 2016 commencement address he delivered at UW-Madison.
By holding my hand up at arm's length, I could completely blot out our planet with my thumb. And I suddenly realized how insignificant we all are. My impression of Earth was one of an incredibly beautiful blue and white ball, much like a Christmas tree ornament hung in an absolutely black sky.
Jeffrey Kluger is an editor-at-large for Time magazine. In 1994, he co-authored the memoir Lost Moon with Jim Lovell. Kluger spoke with Kate Archer Kent this week and starts by reflecting on what he remembers most about the late Milwaukee astronaut.
Jim was, you know, the astronauts back in the Gemini and Apollo days had a watchword when it came to Jim, and that was, if you can't get along with Jim Lovell, you can't get along with anyone. You know, people said there was a reason that he and Frank Borman were assigned to Gemini 7, which was basically 2 weeks in orbit without any spacewalks. So the doors, the hatches were never opened in a space the size of the front seat of a VW Beetle. You need somebody imperturbable, unflappable, and preternaturally genial to make a mission like that. And Jim was that person. You know, I found Jim not terribly taken with his fame and his celebrity. I just wrote Time's tribute to Jim last weekend after he died. And, you know, I described him as a man who went to the moon twice, but was also, you know, a homeowner, a mortgage payer, and a father. And, you know, he just happened to have gone to the moon. And, you know, that was the humility and the nonchalance with which Jim wore his fame.
That's exactly the sentence in your tribute that stops me in my tracks, that Lovell was a naval officer, a father of four, a homeowner who just happened to have been in space.
Yeah.
How did Lovell feel about not getting to the moon? And did those feelings change over the decades and hundreds of hours in space?
I had an interesting conversation with Dave Scott once. Dave was the commander of Apollo 15. He walked on the moon in 1971. He was also, more to the point, in the pilot seat, the right-hand seat of Gemini 8 in 1966. Dave was supposed to be outside on a spacewalk for more than 2 hours, which means more than one complete circuit around the Earth. Hmm. So the headlines in the papers before they flew was, Dave Scott will be the first man to walk around the world. And he was incredibly excited for this. As it turned out, just 8 hours into the mission, a stuck thruster caused them to spin out of control. Armstrong managed to bring the spacecraft to heel, but he was only able to do that by activating the reentry thrusters. And once the reentry thrusters are activated, you have to come right home, because those thrusters, you can't deplete them at all, or you can't reenter safely. So most of the mission was aborted. Dave didn't get to be the first man to walk around the world. He didn't get to join Ed White in the pantheon of Americans who had walked in space. And yet he was early in his career and he knew he would fly again. And still, he told me, he said, I was heartbroken when I came back that I didn't get to fulfill my mission. And then he said, sort of, you know, on the QT, he said, if Lovell ever tells you that he didn't feel that way about Apollo 13. He's lying. And so that comes from another astronaut who knew what it was to lose a mission. You know, Jim, in his later years, when I was writing my book, Apollo 8, in 2015, I went out to visit him and Marilyn again. And he said, look, he said, if I had landed on the moon, I would have said a few words that nobody would have remembered. I would have been just one of 12 men who walked on the moon, 14 men who walked on the moon. We never would have had our movie. We never would have had our book. I never would have had the speaking engagements. He never would have had the speaking engagements that allowed him to buy and build his son a restaurant. His son is an executive chef. He said, so all things on balance, you know, I think it worked out as it was supposed to. On the other hand, as I said in that Time interview, one of the times I was in the Lovell house, I saw a bronzed baby shoe that Jim wore when he was just a toddler. And I thought how fitting it would have been for a lunar boot to be next to the baby shoe. Mm. But that lunar boot never got there. Jim never touched the moon.
He keeps his cool through some of the most harrowing circumstances in these missions. And you described Lovell as being lyrical, saying that there was music when he spoke. What do you mean by that?
I take that from a particular thing that he said to me right around the time our book and our movie were out. As I say in the Time piece, you know, I have spent a career sort of quietly toiling as a science journalist. I enjoy some recognition for my work, but I certainly don't enjoy anything like the fame a lunar astronaut has. Jim knew about that fame. He knew about being sought out for interviews. He knew about being stopped on the street and recognized in restaurants. And he also knew that fame could be a fickle thing, that you splash down on a Tuesday and people forget about you on a Wednesday. And as a result, he said to me, this was right at the peak of all of the noise and all the publicity our movie and our book were getting. He said to me, remember where you're standing on the stage when the spotlight goes out, because nobody's going to help you out to the wings. And I thought, God, where did that come from? This was the man who said nothing more dramatic than, Houston, we've had a problem, when his spacecraft blew up 200,000 miles from Earth. You know, there was little that would rattle Jim. There was little that would shake him into lyricism. And yet he had that lyricism. And Jeff Lovell, his younger son, said there was a lot of that in Jim, and you just didn't see it publicly. But he was a man who could speak in rich metaphors and, you know, really illustrate his point with word pictures.
We're talking about the legacy of Jim Lovell, the Milwaukee astronaut who led the Apollo 13 mission. Jeffrey Kluger is here, editor-at-large for Time magazine, co-authored the memoir Lost Moon with Lovell in 1994. Take us way back. Lovell grows up in Milwaukee, starts his journey to space as an engineering student at UW-Madison, stays for a couple years. What was his relationship like with Milwaukee, and why did he ultimately become an astronaut?
Well, from the time he was a young boy, he had followed the exploits of the world's great rocketeers, Konstantin Tsiolkovsky, Wernher von Braun, later on, Robert Goddard. And, you know, he was convinced that America's future, that humanity's future, lay not in aircraft, but in spacecraft. His connection to and passion for rocketry ran deep. His connection to Wisconsin ran deep, I think, as well. You know, he learned a lot from his upbringing. His father died when he was young. He was raised by a single mother. And I think he really liked the coziness and the familiarity of his hometown. And the only reason he left college was, or he left Wisconsin, was that he was accepted into the Naval Academy when he was 2 years into his college career, and he had to start all over as a freshman again. But I think he would have stayed in Wisconsin, and he may have lived in Wisconsin. You know, he certainly was there until he was selected by NASA, and then, like all of the astronauts, moved down to Houston.
Apollo 13 on the big screen is what we know from the outside. And, you know, the Apollo 13's damaged oxygen tank, spending, you know, two of the vessel's three fuel cells, spacecraft has to return to Earth. You know, conditions on the return were really rough. The crew enduring dehydration, sleep deprivation, near freezing temps. For multiple days, Lovell piloted the craft and ultimately led to a safe landing. What did he do right in this perilous situation in Apollo 13?
I think the biggest thing he did right was in the atmospherics, in the attitude, in the mood in the spacecraft. You know, I asked him if anyone panicked, if there was any moment of, you know, breakdown. And, you know, obviously, if somebody did, he wouldn't share it. But he said, no, he said, our attitude was, we can flip out, we can bounce off the walls for 10 minutes, and we're going to wind up right back where we are trying to figure out how to get home. So let's not waste our time and energy on emotion when we could better expend that time and energy on figuring out how to get home. He used solitaire, the game of solitaire, as a metaphor for the chances they had. And he said, you know, when you have a game of solitaire, as long as you have one more card to turn over, you're still alive. It's only when you're out of cards to turn over that the game is over and you've lost. And he said, and fortunately, we always had another card to turn over. There was always one more step they could take. You know, he welcomed Jack Swigert onto the team just 2 days before they were supposed to launch. I think if Jim hadn't done everything he could to make the Lovell, Mattingly, and Hayes team into the Lovell, Swigert, and Hayes team with just 48 hours to launch, I think if Jim hadn't kept that team together and forged those bonds amongst the three of them in that very short period, I don't think they would have worked as well together. You know, he told me, and this was a line that was in the movie, he told me when they were going around the far side of the moon, Fred and Jack had obviously not seen the moon up close before. Jim had seen it for 10 orbits on Apollo 8 just 2 years earlier, less than 2 years earlier. But Fred and Jack hadn't seen it, and they were, you know, sort of goggle-eyed at the window as they were going around the far side taking pictures. And Jim called their attention back to the matter at hand and said, gentlemen, what are your intentions? And they put their cameras down and they went back to work. And, you know, they didn't get to do as much sightseeing as they would have liked to have done. But Jim kept them focused on the task at hand, which was keeping that spaceship in one piece and dog paddling back home.
Well, let's land on family. Jim Lovell names a triangular-shaped mountain on the moon after his wife, Marilyn, and in 2017, the International Astronomical Union broke its long-standing rule for naming features or objects posthumously to recognize Mount Marilyn. Beyond the mountain, what do you consider Jim Lovell's legacy in the history of spaceflight and the, you know, what family means?
You know, there's a story I told in Apollo 8 of Jim proposing to Marilyn. And typically in the Naval Academy, if you were getting engaged, you would buy your fiance the small women's version of the Naval Academy ring, and that would be her engagement ring. And Jim was walking Marilyn by a jewelry store in Annapolis shortly before he graduated. And he looked in the window and just pointed to all of the women's rings and said, so choose. And she said, choose. And he said, well, yes, for your engagement ring. And she said, James Lovell, do you think I'm going to say yes if you don't ask me properly? And on the sidewalk in Annapolis, in front of that jewelry store, Jim promptly dropped to one knee and proposed to Marilyn, his high school sweetheart. And again, as I say in the book, at that point, it was always true. If you can't get along with Jim Lovell, you cannot get along with anyone.
Jeffrey, thank you so much for the conversation and these remembrances.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to remember Jim.
That's Jeffrey Kluger talking with Kate Archer Kent this week. Kluger is an editor at large for Time magazine. He co-authored the book Lost Moon with Milwaukee astronaut Jim Lovell, who died this month at age 97. This interview came from an audience question as part of the Why Sconson Project. Submit your question at wpr.org/whysconson, and we might be able to track down an answer for you.